Okay, thanks for the introduction, Aaron. Thank you to the organizers for the invitation and for also organizing the conference. So I want to say, because it's a higher algebra conference, I kind of want to say what this has to do with formal moduli problems. But to do that, I want to start with some motivation. So let us suppose that we have some space of parameterizing a family of massless free fermions. So I put space in scare quotes because it could be a space, topological space. It could be a manifold, but it could also be something more general, like a stack. I will try to justify thinking of an example where B is a formal moduli problem. And so the example, in particular, the formal moduli problem example, we think of B as the space of background gauge fields to which we can couple the massless free fermion. Or we can have a space of background metrics, or we could just have an honest, smooth family of Dirac operators, for example. And we want to also do the partition, we want to compute path integrals fiber-wise. Path integral fiber-wise in each B, for each B, for each point, let's say, of B. And the result is that you won't actually, let's say you're computing the expectation value of the observable one, you won't actually get a function. The partition function won't actually be a function on B, but instead it's a section of a line bundle L over B. And this line bundle may or may not be trivial. And basically, the fact of the non-triviality is maybe how you can even define what you mean by anomaly in this case. So that's sort of the general heuristic picture about anomalies of fermions. They're the obstruction to the existence of a well-defined partition function. And my goal today is to show how what Kevin Costello and Owen William have done instantiates this philosophy when the case that B is a formal moduli problem. So that's hopefully my goal. The actual result is a statement of homological algebra, but I think the reason that I think it's interesting is because it fits into this picture. So because the statement is a statement about homological algebra, I want to talk enough about formal moduli problems to translate the geometry of these things into algebra. So that's what I'm going to do now. Any questions so far? Okay. So So let's say this is like an algebra geometric dictionary. So for formal moduli problems. So whenever we have a differential graded Lie algebra, L, we can produce out of it a pointed formal moduli problem called BL. And I won't really say what this is because I'm not an expert on this side, but there are some there's like a translation between facts about this differential graded Lie algebra, and maybe you can, they're either definitions about BL or properties of BL. So L itself you consider as a formal neighborhood of the point in BL. It's a pointed formal moduli problem. The Chevalier-Eilenberg cochains on L is like functions on BL. And the important thing that I want to get to, that I want to say, because my result concerns such an object, is that DG C bullet L modules are like sections of spaces of sections. It's a space of sections. Of a vector bundle on BL. Perhaps maybe instead of vector bundle, there's some better word. I don't know, quasi-coherent sheaf, or I don't know. Ben once told me maybe, I don't know, incoherent sheaf or no. Okay. Anyway, but I have a lowbrow. Has to be rigorous because the result is in terms of this kind of object, but that's how I think of it. Okay, so now I want to talk about the massless free fermion as understood using the BV formalism in the style of Costello and Gwilliam. So let me first define what Costello means by a free BV theory and show then how the massless free fermion fits into this. Well, a free BV theory, it's just an elliptic complex together with a non-degenerate skew symmetric degree minus one pairing, which I denote by, or which is usually denoted by these angle brackets. And then we require Q to be skew adjoint. And then, so what they show is that from these data, you can define cochain complexes of classical and quantum observables. Which sort of, and the differential on these encodes gauge invariance and, yeah. basically encodes word identities. And now for the key example, this massless free fermion. Okay, this piece of chalk has reached its end. Okay, so the key example, we need M G to be a Riemannian manifold. We choose some, we have a Z mod 2 graded vector bundle over it. With a metric, which I use round brackets. And then finally, we have a formally self-adjoint Dirac operator. So what that means is that it's this thing looks like gamma mu d mu, where gamma mu satisfy anti-commutation relations for this G. And now also, so these are the data I need to define the massless free fermion. Let me also say, let gamma be the chirality involution, which acts on the even part by plus one, and on the odd part of V acts by minus one. And then we let the space of fields have smooth sections in degree zero. Great, thank you. In degree zero, we put smooth sections of V, and also in degree one, we put smooth sections of V, and here we put the Dirac operator precomposed with gamma. And for the pairing, we simply use the metric on the bundle, and we integrate with respect to the volume form, the Riemannian volume form. So those are the basic data we need to define massless free fermion. Any questions?
The spinners, are they odd? In what you're doing, or
yeah, secretly they are. There should be an extra Z mod 2 grading that I haven't talked about that I didn't want to add to, so as not to confuse people.
And that does affect like the skew symmetry. So the skew symmetry of that operator is really an odd skew symmetry.
Yeah.
In a graded sense, right?
Yeah, in the Z cross Z mod 2 graded sense, yes. Does affect that for sure. And it affects, of the pairing too. Okay. So now I need to talk what I mean about by symmetries. So that'll bring in a differential graded Lie algebra into this story. So DGLA L acts on a free BV theory FQ pairing if it acts on the elliptic complex, if it acts on F and Q. In other words, this is like an abelian DGLA, so we form a split square zero extension of L via F, plus we need to have some interaction with the pairing here. We need the operators to be by skew symmetric operators. And then again, by analogy with the top board, we also get the equivariant. We get equivariant. Yeah.
So curly F was sections in degree zero. This one,
right? Sorry, I meant it's the whole complex.
Okay. And M is even then.
Well, it can be odd dimensional. So I'm thinking about a generalized Dirac operator where you can, for example, V could be Durham forms and the grading could be by the form grading mod 2, and the operator would be D plus D star, and that works in any dimension. So that's also an example of such a thing. I'm using like a slightly more general notion of Dirac operator. Okay, so when we have, let's see, with a free BV theory with an action of L, we can form equivariant observables. And so what you should think about these is like they're observables that are with background gauge fields turned on. So these are DG C bullet L modules. Okay, and so now going back to our main example, you can define the axial symmetry of the massless free fermion. So we take L to be Durham forms on M, and FQ pairing to be the massless free fermion. And then let me just draw on this guy what the different forms do. So since the cochain complex sits in degree 0 and 1, higher forms of degree 2 and higher don't just act by 0 for degree reasons. And so if f is a function, i.e. a 0 form, it acts by minus f gamma on degree 1 part and f gamma on degree 0. And for a 1 form, it acts by Clifford multiplication. So alpha mu, gamma mu. So this is the example of the massless free fermion. This is the axial symmetry. And now I can state some of the results. So some results. So the first theorem is that for any DGLA that acts on the massless free fermion, the equivariant observables, quantum observables, are quasi-isomorphic to a DGCL module P, which I'll describe in a second. So there's a cochain, there's a even a homotopy equivalence of DGCL modules, where P it's a C bullet L module whose underlying graded vector space is the same as C bullet L's. So I think the word is it's semi-free of rank one over C bullet L. So what I, yeah.
So this is for any L, this isn't still just the axial symmetry?
Not just the axial symmetry, any symmetry.
So how much, to what extent is this something about the massless free fermion, or is it a property of some more general class of symmetries of quantum systems? I mean, it doesn't seem like, I mean, the statement of the theorem
sure.
doesn't seem to use the...
Sure. I mean, so let's take L equals zero. Then it says the quantum observables are quasi-isomorphic to C. And that's not always true.
Does zero not act on the massless free fermion?
It's true for the massless free fermion, but it's not true in general that the quantum observables will just give you C.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But do you expect that there's some hypotheses you could put on this, like L acts on a system with such and such properties that...
Yeah. I would guess, yeah. Maybe if the L equals zero case works, then I would guess the whole case works. That would be, I think my techniques might work for that, yeah.
So the observables is the space of possible solutions of what an end is.
Yeah, basic. So the observables, yeah, possible solutions, and then the underlying sort of the cohomology is what happens when you mod out by all the word identities. So sometimes it might not be possible to just say you will actually get a number when you take into account all the symmetries. Like for every observable, you can always, you know, just because of word identities, determine its expectation value. Let me put the other theorem up real quick. And then make one comment and then open up the board for question, open up the floor to questions. So for the axial symmetry, P is isomorphic to C bullet L. That's equivalent to the index of the Dirac operator being zero. So this is a pretty well-known result in physics that the axial anomaly is measured by the index of the Dirac operator. And so this is a version of that. This is a version of that in the formalism of Costello and Gwilliam.
And then the failure of that isomorphism is how you see the anomaly?
Yeah, the anomaly, if the index of the Dirac operator is non-zero, then this bundle, this C bullet L module is not going to be isomorphic to the trivial such one. And that sort of fits into this picture. It's not the trivial. The P should be thought of as the space of sections of some line bundle on BL, like in this story. And that line bundle is trivial if and only if the Dirac operator is the index is zero.
So when Davide was talking this morning, he described anomalies as living in some sort of cohomology. Should I think that this P is like some non-trivial class in PIC, and that's the value of the anomaly?
Basically, yeah. P has a differential which looks like the Chevalier-Eilenberg differential, plus it's twisted by some cohomology class, some cohomology class in C bullet L. And you compute it, and it's proportional to the index of the Dirac operator. Yeah, basically said all I can say in this amount of time, so thanks.
So I guess people have already been asking questions, but are there any further questions?
Will this get simplified eventually into a sort of machine where, like, if you give me like a PV theory and a I don't know, some data, I can just kind of crank the handle and like it'll pop out where the anomaly lives. Like it seems like you had to do some work to get to this point.
There is a machine. That's where it's Kevin's machine.
Okay.
I basically crank the handle on Kevin's machine and he tells you where the co-chain complex that where the obstruction lives. And you have to characterize, like the work is in characterizing that complex in for each separate case and like computing the cohomology class of the obstruction in that.
Yeah. Did you like compile this into something you can double click on or something?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'm not strong enough to turn a crank. But,
Computers.
Okay, so if there's no further questions, let's thank Eugene again.